WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. In some urban neighborhoods, it's getting difficult to find someone who hasn't been the victim of a crime. Some communities are taking matters into their own hands by forming crime watch groups that patrol the neighborhood. Many of these groups see themselves as the eyes and ears of the police. But other groups are more militant and try to intervene and make citizens' arrests. My guest, Richard Neely, is a justice on the West Virginia Supreme Court. He's written a new book about crime watch groups called Take Back Your Neighborhood. Neely believes crime watch groups are essential these days because the police are incapable of protecting us.
The average police patrolman, whether it be in Charleston, West Virginia, or Chicago, Illinois, or Los Angeles, California, only spends approximately 5% of his active working time patrolling. The rest of the time, he's answering domestic violence calls, he's regulating traffic, he's taking routine police reports for paperwork purposes so that people can put in for their insurance. He may be doing a little bit of investigation with regard to crimes that have already happened. But the last thing that he does is patrol. Now, what you want to do is not catch criminals after the fact. You want to keep the crime from happening in the first place. And the only correlation between crime rates and any police activity is between crime rates and a police patrolling activity that is so intensive, so open, notorious, and visible that the bad guys really believe that there is a high likelihood that they're going to be caught.
A lot of communities and businesses rely on private security forces instead of on the police. In fact, you give an interesting statistic in your book. The number of private security forces compared to the police are 2 to 1 in favor of the private forces. The way you describe it is that a lot of residential communities have created privatized space. What do you mean by that?
If you've got money, what you do is get yourself either a fortified city building, literally fortified, where you have locked doors, television monitors, underground garages that open only to authorized people with special keys, special elevators, and you just keep the bad guys out as if you were Fort Knox, or you set up a community like Kiowa Island, South Carolina, where you have a large number of houses all surrounded by a nice high fence or a natural barrier like a waterway, and in order to get in there, you must identify yourself at a guard post, give your name, give your business, say who you're visiting, etc. And the result is that in places where the space has been privatized, the crime rate is vanishingly small.
So your argument is if the rich are going to hire their own guards to protect themselves, then the middle class and the working class and the poor, if they can, need to organize to protect themselves since they can no longer really rely on the police.
Well, they never could rely on the police.
Right, that's the point you made before. Okay, so let's talk about the kind of community patrol you have in mind.
Let's talk about vigilantes first.
Yeah, you use the word vigilante.
This is a word most people, like me, for instance,
I hate that word. I always think of people who are going beyond the law to take matters into their own hands, you know, who want to organize a lynching.
Right, that's wrong, because there are good vigilantes and there are bad vigilantes. Obviously, the bad vigilantes you don't want to imitate and the good vigilantes you want to encourage. The bad vigilantes are the Chinese Red Guards during the Cultural Revolution or the Nazi Brown Shirts or the American Ku Klux Klan. These are not criminal vigilantes. These are a bunch of thugs enforcing self-serving social and economic policies through the force of arms on an unwilling population. They have nothing whatsoever to do with enforcing the law. The good vigilantes are the traditional American posse. Now, when I was young, and when a lot of our listeners were young, you'd go to the grade C cowboy movies, and the posse was always an object of obloquy, ridicule, and contempt. They were always some pus-gutted old burghers who were riding nags for horses and couldn't shoot straight, and so they were always a ludicrous looking group of folks. The truth of the matter is that the law in America up until the 1930s in most places outside the major cities was still largely enforced by the use of posses and by the use of citizens. So that is a legal, traditional, acceptable way to enforce the law and was even required in England all the way up through the 19th century. In England today, police officers don't carry guns, and the reason is that police officers are thought to be nothing other than ordinary citizens who have been paid to do what the ordinary citizen is expected to do for nothing. Finally, the towering monument to the legitimacy of criminal vigilantes is the continued vitality of the power of citizens' arrest in the United States. Almost every state in the Union provides citizens with substantially the same powers that police officers have. In some states, the power of citizens' arrest has been narrowed somewhat by statute. But everywhere there is the right, for example, to apprehend a fleeing felon, to arrest people who are placing the community in imminent danger.
If you're just joining us, my guest is Richard Neely, and he's a justice on the West Virginia Supreme Court, former Chief Justice, and he's the author of the new book, Take Back Your Neighborhood, Organizing a Citizens Patrol Force to Fight Crime in Your Community. Now, the kind of group I'm familiar with is your neighborhood town watch group, in which volunteers from the neighborhood drive around making sure that there's nothing that they can see that is going wrong, nobody being mugged or raped, no houses being broken into. Is that the kind of community group that you have in mind?
Yeah, that's one kind. In your area, they use cars. In the city areas, the urban areas, it is much better to walk. And there are a number of do's and don'ts in this thing. The big don't is don't ever allow anybody to carry a firearm. Absolutely no guns. There are too many bad guys out there with guns to start with. If the drug dealers have Uzis and AK-47s and M-16s, that is not a job for citizens. That is a job for the police or the SWAT team. It is not a job for ordinary people. But the common run-of-the-mind rapist, murderer, armed robber, vandal, car thief, burglar, right, is not armed. He's not very brave, and more than likely, he's a bit of a coward. These people will respond by leaving when they see active citizen patrol forces. Consequently, your people have got to have uniforms. In the book, I talk about the value of dressing up like the Canadian Royal Mounted Police with an enormous red jacket and blue trousers and a huge Yogi Bear hat, because that's a uniform that can be seen a mile away. But unfortunately, it costs about $500. But the Metro Orange Coalition in Washington, D.C., managed to have a very distinctive uniform for under $30, and that's an orange windbreaker, an orange baseball cap, an orange T-shirt, all in sort of day glow neon orange that is very, very visible.
What techniques have you seen citizens groups use to try to stop a mugging or a rape or a robbery that's already in progress?
Well, usually if uniformed citizens approach a crime in progress, whoever is committing the crime runs. That's the first thing. The Guardian Angels in New York have been very successful at protecting women in subway stations, for example, from being hassled by the normal macho juvenile gang. And the way that they do it is that they just walk up next to the woman and stand there. And that immediately eliminates the woman's fear, because she knows that there is someone who is committed to protecting her who looks reasonably competent, because there are two or three of these people, guardian angels, together. And whoever is doing the hassling, unless he's mentally ill, and you often have that problem too, by the way, will just go away.
I know you're really in favor of the guardian angels. Now, some of their critics say that this is a group that's really into this macho ethic. They're warriors who like to fight, and they can therefore be provocative. And also groups like the guardian angels end up taking away control from the police. What do you think?
I think that's nonsense. I think the Guardian Angels are a group of teenagers primarily and young adults who have decided that they are going to make a difference and that they are going to very visibly join the good guys rather than the bad guys. There have actually been studies and polls taken in New York where the approval rating of the Guardian Angels is roughly 73%, which is just phenomenal. Hardly anything gets an approval rating of 73% in government or in civic affairs. And you say, well, is this thing not subject to abuse? Of course it's subject to abuse. Everything's subject to abuse. The King case out in Los Angeles demonstrates in very graphic terms, because it was videotaped, that there is police brutality out there. What's amazing is that people don't realize that it is certainly not limited to the Los Angeles police force. There is police brutality in every small town, every small city, every medium-sized city, every big city, and even every rural sheriff's office in America. Police brutality goes with the policing territory. And so you say, aren't these people liable to violate ordinary citizens' civil rights and civil liberties? The answer to that is yes, they are likely to violate the ordinary citizens' civil rights and civil liberties, but they are much, 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 much less likely to violate the ordinary citizens' civil rights and civil liberties than the police. The police are really the great violators of people's civil rights and civil liberties. And I'm not just being disparaging of the police. I have a high regard for most police officers. I think that in many instances, they are real heroes. Many of them give their lives in the defense of law and order. But I am not a Dr. Pangloss. You know, I'm not naive. There is a lot of police brutality out there, and it is concentrated in brutal acts largely against the underclass, whether it's the minority underclass or just the down-and-out white Anglo-Saxon Protestant male underclass, largely people who do not have the social, political, or economic resources to do anything about it.
Richard Neely is my guest, Justice on the West Virginia Supreme Court and author of the book Take Back Your Neighborhood. If you have a neighborhood crime watch group, there's a chance that someone in the group would be held liable for false arrest or for intimidation or something like that. What kind of liability protection do you think a crime watch group needs to have?
Well, actually, I'm very elaborate about that in the book. The truth of the matter is that if you are in a working class neighborhood or a lower middle class neighborhood and you don't own a lot of property, don't have a lot of equity in your house, you don't really have to worry. Lawyers don't sue people who don't have money. Lawyers work on contingent fees. If the guy doesn't have any money to get, even if you get a judgment, nobody bothers to sue you. Now, if you're in a middle-class neighborhood or an upper-middle-class neighborhood where, say, the older people in the group already own their own house, have money in the bank, have pension rights that people can levy on, then indeed you better go through the motion of forming a corporation and having that insulation from liability, and then buying an insurance policy. And I even tell you in the book the guy you can call out in Minneapolis who can get you an insurance policy for this kind of a group if you don't have a local guy who's able to do it for you.
Tell me about one case or one incident that you've had to deal with in your work as a judge that helped shape your view of crime and crime prevention in America.
Oh, it isn't any one case. I review somewhere in the neighborhood of 400 criminal cases a year, perhaps even more this year. I just see crime after crime after crime after crime. And the level of violence, of savagery that comes before me makes me terribly fearful. I mean, I fear for myself, I fear for my wife, I fear for my children, and that's even when I live in a state that has the lowest crime rate in the country.
Richard Neely is the author of Take Back Your Neighborhood. We'll hear from a member of a crime watch group after the short break. This is Fresh Air. We called the co-founder of a town watch group in West Mount Airy, an integrated neighborhood of families and young professionals in Philadelphia. Mark Hartsfield grew up in the neighborhood, and when he recently returned to live there, he was disturbed by the increase in crime. Hartsfield is a service manager at a car dealership. We caught up with him on a pay phone while he was on a camping trip. I asked him if he had been the victim of a crime before starting the group a couple of years ago. He told me the story of a crime he witnessed and tried to stop.
My neighbor, the door was ajar to her apartment, and it appeared to have been kicked, and the room ransacked. So when I stepped in, I stumbled onto this situation. The perpetrator was armed with a knife, and we tussled about on the balcony, and subsequently he was by myself thrown over the balcony. We were not able to catch him. After checking on her condition, a neighbor and myself tried to chase him. It was unbelievable. From a second-story balcony, this young man got up and was able to run, limp, or elude us. The police responded almost immediately, and he was never found. I believe he was hiding or perhaps being harbored by someone in the area.
Now that you're in a Crime Watch group, if you had walked in on a rape again, would you have done anything differently than you did then?
If I had walked in, if I had stumbled into a situation, I probably would not have done anything different. However, it's very likely that before entering a situation like that, if I was close enough to a phone, I would call the police and notify them of the suspicious nature of what I was observing.
Your Crime Watch group is supposed to be the eyes and ears for the police, right? You're not supposed to try to apprehend people yourself, make a citizen's arrest. Is that right?
That is absolutely correct. Our patrollers are cautioned on patrol tactics. We ask them to stay in their cars, those that do the car patrol, keep their doors locked, keep their windows lowered to a point where they can hear, and anything that they see or that they hear that appear to be suspicious, report it to the police, not to take action themselves, because you never know when an individual is breaking the law, whether they're going to harm you because you pose a threat to them. So by all means, we are the eyes and ears of the police force. The police department in our area was, 8 years ago, about a 29-car police department for our district. It's now, on any given day, as low as 10 and as high as 15. So we've lost about half of the manpower that the police department has had to offer in the last 8 years. And this makes for a very difficult time for the police to patrol that area. We have a very large district. Our district is one of the largest in the city.
Tell me what a typical shift is like for you.
A typical shift is uneventful, fortunately. And that is something that can become boring, but hopefully doesn't become boring to a point where people stop patrolling. And a typical patrol would be driving street by street through the neighborhood, making note of any abandoned automobiles, of any damaged automobiles, or of anything suspicious. And we also, from time to time, will try to report street lights out, any traffic signal that fails to work, anything to keep our watchers busy in our neighborhood, to report those things to the city, because they also help to deter crime. You know, a street light that's not lit on a block, that's never lit on a block, that's the type of thing that someone surveying the area for crime recognizes and maybe somewhere where they choose to hit.
Can you tell me your personal reasons for joining a Crime Watch group?
Well, I've lived in this community most of my life. I grew up on the street where I live now, and I'd just like to see it stay a safe place to raise my children. I have two small boys, and I don't want to see our community end up like some in the city, where people don't care or aren't willing to take a risk to try and help the community. There are a lot of places in this country where crime is second nature to people. That's not something that we're willing to, or that I am willing to, accept. accept for my community.
Can you tell how effective your Crime Watch group is?
Well, about 6 months ago, the statistics showed that crime was down 18% to 23% in our part of the police district. And that was directly due to the Town Watch effort in the neighborhood.
Let me ask you, you're on a camping trip now with your family, yes?
That's correct.
Is anybody watching your home while you're gone?
Yes. My brother also lives nearby, and other neighbors in the Town Watch. That's something that we encourage people to do, to notify members of Town Watch when you go away, so that people can pick up your newspapers or get your mail. In my case, I have a cat that has to be fed. So that's something that we offer and something that we ask our watchers to do.
Mark Hartsfield is a co-founder of a Town Watch group in the Philadelphia neighborhood of West Mount Airy. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.